Taking a look at skin cancer on the program now. It's the most common type of cancer. So when you enjoy the outdoors, don't forget to protect yourself from those UV rays. Larry Mueller here with Dr. Apple Bodemer. Great to have her back with us. She's a dermatologist, associate professor in the Department of Dermatology at UW-Madison. And she directs the Integrative Dermatology Clinic. So we'll talk with her about how to reduce your risk of skin cancer. And, of course, we'll take your questions. And I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about UV radiation? Are you confused about what sunscreen to buy? Love to have you part of the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Apple Bodemer, good to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here, Larry. Thanks for having me.
So what's the difference between skin cancer and melanoma?
Well, melanoma is a type of skin cancer.
Okay.
So we often break out skin cancer into two categories. There's melanoma, and then there's the non-melanoma types. And of those non-melanoma types, there are two that are the most common, basal cell and squamous cell. Those are sometimes also called keratinocytic or keratitic skin cancer because they arise from the cells that make up the bulk of the epithelium, the top layers of the skin, whereas melanoma comes from melanocytes, which are those specific pigment-producing cells that help the skin make melanin and pigment that protect it a little bit from UV radiation.
What directly causes skin cancer?
The vast majority of skin cancer is caused by UV radiation exposure. So it's thought that in non-melanoma type skin cancers, that is at least 90% of those cancers are caused specifically by the UV radiation. And in melanoma, that's also pretty high. I think they attribute about 86% of it. With melanoma, there can be some genetic mutations that are involved. And so it is something that can run in families. Whereas the non-melanoma type skin cancers, we do tend to see patterns in families, but it's more due to the fact that our skin tone runs in our family and our sun protection habits and our sun exposure habits are kind of learned by family.
So what the heck is it about UV radiation that makes it so dangerous?
Well, I mean, and it's kind of this double-edged sword. Like, we need that radiation because that's what fuels our planet. Without it, we wouldn't be alive. But too much is the problem. So it's not that UV radiation is bad and that sun is bad and we all have to hide in our basements, but that we kind of just have to watch it. And some of us have to be more careful than others with more fair skin tones that are more prone to burning. We're more prone to having more UV radiation kind of get access to the nuclei in our skin cells and the cells that sort of help support the skin. And when we have that exposure, that leads to DNA mutations that over time can build up and lead to the development of tumors or skin cancer.
Yeah. And what are the signs? What are those signs of skin cancer?
So for those non-melanoma type, the type that are, you know, the most common, what we tend to see are rough, scaly spots. They're often red or pink. When they get tender or painful or start bleeding on their own without kind of being picked at or scratched at, that's when we see sort of like that. That's the concerning signs, those non-healing sores, wounds that just bleed without getting messed with, or areas that the skin is a bit rough where you're also having some tenderness. Melanoma is a totally different ballgame because it's a different type of cell that creates that type of cancer. And that, for the vast majority of the time, shows up as a new brown or dark spot. About 70% of them come up as a new spot. About 30% will show up as changes to an existing mole. So, you know, people that have a lot of moles, that isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it is a good idea to keep an eye on your skin and to watch your skin, whether you have a lot of moles or not, so that you're going to be tuned into picking up on something that's new or changing.
So I have one on my, sort of a splotchy spot on my back, and my doctor checks it, Jim Sossman checks it every time I come in because I say, hey, look, take a look at this again. And he says, no, it's nothing to be worried about. But I still kind of worry about it.
Well, there's a number of spots that we collect over time as we get older. And the most common one is probably something called a seborrheic keratosis. And they're often confused by patients with, like, could this be concerning? And they have a very characteristic look to them. They look kind of more waxy. They have sort of a warty look to the surface. Mm-hmm. They can get inflamed and you can see them get itchy. And so it's just good to know the types of skin spots or the types of spots your skin makes and kind of get comfortable with the spots you have. And, you know, I think a lot of primary care doctors are really comfortable looking at these seborrheic keratoses or other benign spots that we collect over time and recognizing them and reassuring people. Now, if they're, you know, if they have concerns, then they send a person to somebody like me who can look at it. And we have a little more experience looking at those kinds of spots where if there is a question, then we have some tools where we can use magnifiers and things like that to get a better sense of it. But with these seborrheic keratoses, you know, for me that looks at skin all day long, I can look at them practically across the room and most of the time be able to put it in that bucket. So my guess is that's probably what you've got on your back. I can't say that for sure because I've never seen it. But you know, if it's not causing much trouble and it's kind of staying about the same and it's not doing anything, cancer never stays the same. You know, so that's a clue that if you've had something for a long time, 5, 10 years, and it's not really doing anything, then, you know, it's probably okay. But it is something to check with your primary doctor about for sure. And, you know, what you're doing is being proactive and continuing to ask and like, are you sure there's nothing wrong? And, you know, I think if he had any questions, he would send you on to somebody.
In fact, a listener did email to ask if it's considered a standard of care for general practitioners to refer their skin cancer patients to a dermatologist.
Not always, and it depends on when the skin cancer was. You know, some primary care doctors feel really comfortable doing biopsies themselves, and some don't. So if there's ever something that's concerning, you know, a primary care doctor might do the biopsy themselves or might say, ooh, I don't know about this one, and then would send it to us. So it's and it depends if the question is asking if I've already had a skin cancer, do I need to see a dermatologist regularly? Do I need to see a dermatologist for the rest of my life? Not necessarily. It depends on how long you are away from that skin cancer. So once we get to about 5 years from a non-melanoma skin cancer, a lot of times if there hasn't been any new cancer show up in that 5-year timeframe, those patients can certainly go back to their primary care doctors and, you know, have their skin looked at. Melanoma, we do tend to hang on to a bit longer in terms of whether they should see a dermatologist or if primary care is a good place for them to be. Usually we see the melanoma patients longer term.
How common is the melanoma, by the way?
I don't know the exact number, that percentage. I should have had that. I do know with the non-melanoma skin types, but it's the fifth most common type of cancer in men and the sixth most common cause of cancer in women. And that's across all age groups. Certainly as people get older, we see that not be as significant because other types of cancer do come up. And so especially in younger people, it tends to have a little bit more representation in those younger people, just because other cancers haven't come in and filled in gaps. You know, we know that that it's kind of expected to affect about an average of 1 in 28 men and an average of 1 in 41 women over a lifetime. So I guess that does give a number about, you know, 1 in 2 or 3 women will get melanoma. And in men, it's more like, you know, 1 in 3 about four.
Yeah. Jill and Stoddard. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I joined a little late, so I'm not sure if you made your viewers or your listeners aware of the importance of wearing a hat. I recently had a basal cell carcinoma and had a lot of my scalp removed pretty deeply. So just to make everybody aware of that, too. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. And hat's a good thing.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that also the comment that the caller made about, you know, we sort of think of these non-melanoma skin cancers, well, people don't typically die from them. You know, they're more of a nuisance and getting them cut off, but they can grow to be fairly extensive. And some of these surgeries, while this is not necessarily a life-threatening condition, unless you're immunosuppressed or have other issues going on, they can be very disfiguring. And then the second part of that is, as we get older, our hair thins in both women and men. And so those hats are really important to remember. You kind of might think like, oh, I'm still putting sunscreen on my face and I still have hair on my head. But if your hair is getting thinner, that's something to be aware of.
Well, I'm wearing my Wisconsin Public Radio hat all the time these days, Apple. Dr. Apple Bodimer, our guest, she'll be with us right up till 12:30 today, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with Dr. Apple Bodimer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at preventing skin cancer on the show today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Apple Bodimer, a dermatologist and associate professor in the Department of Dermatology at UW-Madison. So, questions, I hope you'll join in. Have you tried UPF clothing? Did it work for you? What other questions do you have? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take some calls. Scott in Iowa, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Hi. I appreciate you guys' program. I just had a question about my son. I have a 17-year-old son, and we just recently noticed that on the very top of his head, in about a dime-sized area, he's getting some sprinkling of gray hairs, and it's not throughout his head. It's only in one location. And I inspected the skin underneath it, and I can't really see where it's been damaged or thought maybe had, you know, inflammation or something. Can't really see anything in particular on that. And I just didn't know if we should be concerned or if it's just something. We looked it up, you know, and kind of losing the pigment, and we didn't know if it's something we should be concerned about.
Scott, thanks for calling. What do you think, Dr. Bodimer?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And there are several conditions that can lead to loss of pigment in the skin. And certainly having, you know, watching it, if it seems like it's just stable and not doing anything and you can't see anything really going on with the surface of the skin, then it might just be fine to keep an eye on. But if it seems like it's getting bigger and bigger, or if you start to notice that the skin underneath is looking white rather than just kind of the pale, normal skin tone that he has, that might be time to check in with a doctor about it.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Thanks, Scott, for calling. Colette and Toma, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Colette.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. I'm calling to find out if there's a difference between sunblock and sunscreen, and if there's a recommendation.
Oh, we lost you, Colette. So what's the difference between sunscreen and sunblock? And she might have been asking, you know, what should she be using?
They're pretty much used interchangeably. They're basically the same thing. So it might be just a marketing thing if you're seeing it on a bottle. But sunscreen and sunblock are basically the same thing. They're meant to block UV radiation from hitting our skin. The big question comes like, okay, well, I'm using sunscreen. And, you know, most people are using that as their first line of defense. And I argue that it should be your backup plan, that we should be focusing on looking for shade when we can, trying to keep our outdoor activities in the morning and evening and kind of avoid the midday hours. And then wearing wide-rimmed hats, wide-lens sunglasses, and UPF protective clothing. And then sunscreen should be our backup plan when those other things either don't work or it's, you know, we can't cover our faces with UPF clothing. So you need something to cover those exposed areas. There's a lot of controversy around different types of sunscreens or sunblocks, whatever you want to call them. And the chemical sunscreens have been under fire more recently in the last probably 2 or 3 years. In particular, one called oxybenzone and another one called octinoxate. Those two we know can be absorbed to a much higher degree than we initially thought. And there is some evidence that they can cause some increased allergic type reactions as well as possibly some hormone disruption. Now, there are a whole host of other chemical sunscreens that are probably safer than those two, but there's questions about them as well. And because of these controversies, I generally just recommend stick to the mineral-based sunscreens, the zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. They tend to leave a little bit more of a white residue, but there are tinted products out there and products out there that don't leave as much of a residue. So you'll just have to play around with different brands and find one that works for you.
Rick and Merrill, let's turn to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hi. My family seems to have a history of getting skin cancer. I just had a wound that wouldn't heal, and it turned out to be skin cancer on my face. And you kind of answered the question already, what to put on and to prevent it, but I thought I'd ask it one more time.
Sure.
Anything specific for me?
Is it on your face or your scalp, or where is it?
It's on my face.
Okay.
Just by my right, the rim of my glasses.
Okay.
Yeah, so for especially those areas I mentioned, the wide-lensed sunglasses, I know they're not quite as in style as they were a few years ago, but especially those, you know, and if you are prone to a lot of sun damage around your eyes, they have ones that wrap around to give you a little bit more protection for those that temple area, which also tends to be fairly sensitive. And then, you know, wearing those wide-rimmed hats, a hat with a 3-inch rim will cover about 3/4 of your face, and a hat with a 4-inch rim will cover pretty much all of your face. So that's a lot wider than what most people think of, like a fishing cap. It might have an inch or two rim around it. So you do really want to use those floppy hats and then protect with the sunscreen in the areas that aren't covered by your hat.
You mentioned floppy hats. Eleanor emailed. She spends a lot of time both in and on the water fishing. She has really sensitive skin. Are there affordable sunscreens that are both waterproof and okay for sensitive skin?
Yes, they definitely make them that are marketed for people with sensitive skins. They often will put it on the bottle because they want to promote that if they have a sunscreen that is rated for that. The other trick is to look for sunscreens that are meant for babies. So that's what I ask most of my patients with sensitive skin. Look for a mineral-based sunscreen that's marketed for babies. And there are several out there that are really good. They tend to be a little bit thicker, a little bit more of a heavy white residue. I have some patients that have mixed a little bit of their foundation if you're a makeup wearer. And if you're not, you could even just get a bottle for that to mix in with your sunscreen just to give it a little bit of pigment if you don't like that ghostly white hue that some of those sunscreens do give.
By the way, you can join in too. We have open lines, get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Tab called to ask and couldn't stay with us, but wondered if skin tags can become cancerous. And wonders, is it okay to just take them off yourself? And on that same subject, William emailed to ask what causes skin tags, how do you prevent them, and does my diet affect their production, and wants to know the best way to remove them. So all of those 10 questions that I just brought to you, I'm sorry, Apple, but...
Yeah, no, that's good. That's a lot. And kind of around that, like if I had a quick, easy way to get rid of skin tags, I'd be a millionaire right now because there aren't any quick, easy ways. Kind of backing it up from where do they come from? We tend to see skin tags in areas of friction. So inner thighs, under the arms, under the breasts, around the neck, those are the places where they tend to show up most commonly. They are not cancerous. And I mean, I never say anything is 100% because there sometimes are some things that could look like skin tags and somebody might misdiagnose it. But for the vast, you know, 99.999%, they're not cancerous. So we don't usually worry about that when it comes to skin tags, unless they're looking inflamed or starting to bleed or doing something weird. Then you might want to have that checked out by your doctor. Certainly they can get caught in clothes and get kind of twisted and that can cause them to look weird. But your doctor would be the good one to ask about that, somebody who can see it in person. Having them removed is not a serious deal, but doing it on your own can, you know, be a little bit risky. So we often will cut them off. And I also want to stress that insurance rarely covers this. So it usually is an out-of-pocket expense. And anytime you're, you know, cutting the skin, there's a risk of infection. So I just have to put that out there, you know, but I mean, I have patients that clip them off themselves that can be painful and can lead to some bleeding. Sometimes there's blood vessels in those, especially larger skin tags, that can be pretty painful if there's a nerve kind of entwined in it. There are some products that are over the counter that say that they remove skin tags. I've not ever had a patient who's come back and said this worked great for me, but probably those people that it works great for, they may not be coming and talking to me about their skin tags. So mm-hmm. I, but there's nothing that I'm endorsing. I should say that out there.
Tommy mailed to ask if sunscreen interferes with the absorption of vitamin D, and do we even need to take vitamin D since we get it from the sun?
Yes. Well, that's a very complex topic. Vitamin D is a really, really interesting one because it is something that our body makes and needs some UVB exposure in order to do that. However, a lot of people don't do it very well. And I have a lot of, you know, good Wisconsin farmers who spent their whole life in the sun and they still come to me. They've never used sunscreen. I'm taking off skin cancer after skin cancer and we check their vitamin D level and lo and behold, it's really low. So I don't think that that's a good way to say like, yep, you just go out in the sun and you'll get enough vitamin D because some people just don't. It takes about 10 minutes of exposure during the early like in the morning or evening on the back of your hand. So you don't need a lot of UV to get your UV, like your vitamin D production maximized. But if you're somebody who really strictly avoids the sun, then it might be worth getting it checked. You know, and just seeing if you're one of those people that might have low levels.
Let's go to Gashia in Appleton.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a son with albinism. A lot of people know it better as albino, but properly we refer to them as people with albinism. And so he has the type of albinism he has produces no melanin whatsoever. So he doesn't have any ability to produce pigment. And while we do cover him in sunscreen and UPF clothes and all that when he's outside playing, my main question was, what about while he's in the car? And we do have tinted windows in the back of our car, but wondering, you know, does that actually protect him from the sun or does he need to have sunscreen on while he's riding in the car? And then I also had a second question about, you know, transfer time. So if I'm going to be grabbing him from, say, the car and bringing him inside, is that amount of sun exposure damaging over time? Should he really just have sunscreen on 24/7?
Yeah, that's a unique situation for people with that condition because they are much more sensitive to UV radiation damage to their skin cells. What you're doing are all those good things about protecting him from the sun when you can, maybe having him take a siesta in the middle of the afternoon so that he's not out there in the kind of the heat of the sun. The question about like transfer times, he's probably okay for a few, you know, I mean, unless your transfer times are taking, you know, 20, 15, 10, you know, minutes, but usually getting to and from the car is not a big deal. However, with non-melanoma type skin cancers, that does build up over time. And so it's not going to hurt to have him make sure he's got his hat on and sunglasses on. And he probably should have sunscreen on, you know, especially during the summer, most of the time. And the first part of the question, Larry, can you remind me about that? Because there's a lot there.
Oh, I missed it. It have to do with clothing?
Well, she said she was using the protective clothing and keeping them as covered as they could.
Oh, wait a minute. I think we have her back. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it was car windows. So
yes, that was great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming back and putting that out there because I think that's a question a lot of people have. So normal window glass will block out UVB, but it does not block out UVA radiation. And UVA can still, even though it doesn't cause burns, it can still penetrate the skin and lead to DNA damage. So just having a tint doesn't necessarily mean that it's a UV blocking tint. So I would contact your car salesman or manufacturer and just see. You can get UV blocking coatings put on windows aftermarket. And I've had a few patients who've done that. And I recall it being less expensive than I thought it would be, but it certainly would be a really good investment for your son to have a UV blocking on the window. I think some car manufacturers are starting to do that in general, but I would double check with your car manufacturer.
Yeah, good advice. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Christina in Madison, your turn. Hi, Christina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I recently was just treated for Mohs on my face. And while I'm recovering, I don't want to do that again. And I was reading about a treatment with Fluorocell and I can't remember what the other chemical is called. It starts with a C, calcipotriol or something. Mm-hmm. And I heard that you can put that on your face proactively to try to treat some of those precancerous lesions so they don't turn into cancer. Do you recommend that, or is that too harsh a treatment?
Yeah, that's a good question. That is something I recommend a lot. I love fluorouracil, and the combination with calcipotriene just shortens the length. So normally with the treatment, you would do twice a day for 2 weeks. With the calcipotriene, we often will have patients do 4 to 5 days instead of 2 weeks. And some people don't get a good reaction in that 4 to 5 days, and they might need to extend it. So they may not be buying themselves much time off. But the fluorouracil is really a great option for those precancer spots called actinic keratoses. And these are usually red, really rough, scaly spots. And, you know, we often will freeze them with liquid nitrogen in the clinic. These are not high risk lesions. About 10% maybe turn into skin cancer. And when they do so over a long period of time. So if you're somebody that's got a lot of sun damage and you've got a bunch of these actinic keratoses, it's something that most of the time your dermatologist or your doctor might bring up with you. But certainly if you bring it up, they'll be happy to talk to you about it. It's a really miserable treatment. And I tell my patients this all the time. It's awful to go through, and you will hate your dermatologist in the middle of it. And you'll be so glad you did it in the end, if you are one of these people who has a lot of these precancerous lesions. It doesn't do a whole lot for the kinds of precancerous changes that lead to basal cell skin cancer. So it really kind of focuses more on that squamous cell type and the actinic keratoses that lead up to it. But it is a great treatment. It's not something I have people do just willy-nilly, and it's not something that I have people kind of just randomly do on their own. It definitely is something that you should do under the direction of your physician, because it can be rough.
There you go, Christina. Thank you. Sarah in Wausau. Let's go to you next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Yes, I'm Sarah. I have a red spot on the side of my nose. I think it was just what you were just talking about. And I'm scheduled to see a dermatologist, but I noticed the past couple of days or past week or so that my bridge of my nose and up into my eyelids is starting to swell up. It's like real puffy. And I was wondering if that had something to do with the red rough spot that's on the side of my nose.
Well, I would get to say probably not. I'm not looking at it, so I'm not really qualified to say that this is, you know, what that could be related to. We don't typically see swelling associated with these actinic keratoses.
Okay, there you go, Sarah. Thank you. Peggy in Lafayette County, your turn.
Hi, I'm just wondering what the relationship is to Parkinson's disease.
Skin cancer and Parkinson's? Yeah, okay.
Right.
I don't think that there's any specific relationship. I think, you know, people with Parkinson's disease do tend to be older, and we tend to see more skin cancer as people get older.
So as far as you know, there's no relationship.
No causal relationship.
Causal relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go, Peggy. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. So what about the UPF-rated clothing? Could talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, I love that. And I love talking about UPF-rated clothing. I think it's come a long way in the last 5 to 10 years in terms of being more affordable and more usable. Any clothes will protect you from UV rays. And one rule of thumb is to hold it up to a light. And if you can see through it, that's the sun getting through it. So a thin, sheer rayon top or a silk top that might be worn is really not going to protect you very much. Whereas a heavy, dark denim, you know, blue jeans or jean jacket is going to really give you some good protection. Any clothing tends to lose a significant amount of their UV when they get wet. And the benefit to these UV protective clothing fabrics is that they don't lose that protective factor even when they get wet. And they can be very thin. They can also have lighter colors. So typically a darker color will be more protective than a lighter color. So a dark blue t-shirt versus the same white t-shirt of the same thickness will be much better protection than the white one. The dark blue will be. And with those UV protective clothing, the light colors work just as well as the dark colors. And now, as we know, in the summer, those dark colors absorb more heat and light colors help keep you a little cooler. So that's a really nice factor of that. But they're basically like a force shield. You put it on, they're protecting you. When you take it off, they're not. whereas sunscreen is a lot more nuanced and needs to be applied a lot thicker than most people are using it. It needs to be reapplied at least every 2 hours, if not more frequently, depending on your activity level. And so this UV protective clothing is great for people who are super active, for gardeners, for runners, for bikers, who are going to be out in the sun, who are going to be sweating. And I think it's just, it's a really great option there.
Bill in Wisconsin Rapids, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Well, I'm a transplant patient, and a lot of transplant drugs and maybe other drugs raise the chance of skin cancer by 30%.
Yes.
So, yeah, go ahead, Apple.
Oh, I was just going to say, yes, that's really true. And for transplant patients, it is important to talk to your transplant doctor about if, you know, you should be seeing a dermatologist regularly. Some transplant patients do great. And even on some of these drugs that are known to increase risks of skin cancer, they don't tend to get them. Some of that depends on family history, pigment that you've had, what's your sun exposure been like earlier in life. So there's a lot of factors that go into it, but certainly transplant patients do need to be a lot more careful.
And what if we aren't careful and we get a sunburn? What's the best treatment?
Get out of the sun, because when your skin is burned, you're much more susceptible to that radiation again, kind of like frostbite. You know, you want to make sure that you don't go back out when you're burned, and that just exacerbate all of that DNA damage. You also want to try to tamp down the inflammation. So using things like aloe gel can be really helpful to calm down some of that inflammation. If it's a really bad burn, maybe even some hydrocortisone might be helpful.
Yeah, that's not. I can just feel it feeling good on my skin. And hopefully I'm not going to get a sunburn this weekend, even though I'll be out probably about 4.5-5 hours playing around a golf for my birthday with a whole group of people. And usually there's one or two sunburns out of the bunch every year.
Well, now you can go and promote, tell people to wear their sunscreen. And happy early birthday.
Thanks very much, Apple. Dr. Apple Bodimer, our guest, she'll be back and we'll talk with her again, dermatologist, associate professor in the Department of Dermatology at UW-Madison. Always fun to have her stop by. Let's see, tomorrow at 11, we'll talk about research related to phosphorus sustainability, how to use less phosphorus and how to keep it from our soil and water. And then at 11:45, we'll look at how Great Lakes fish populations are doing. So I hope you'll join us for that starting at 11 tomorrow. But you know what? We've got the whole afternoon and evening ahead of you here. Why not just stay listening? We've got lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening and stay with us.